It's time for the Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. The views expressed at the Financial Cafe are those of the hosts and do not represent the views of Southern Illinois University Edwardsville, the SIU Board of Trustees, or WSIE Radio. Securities offered through Nickel Investors Corporation at No. 1 Executive Park, Granite City, Illinois. Member FINRA and SIPC.
If I had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
I'd be rich.
And now, welcome to the Financial Cafe and our hosts, Larry Lexo and John Graney.
Good morning, John.
Good morning, Larry. How are we doing today?
Another fine Saturday, another fine topic to talk about.
Yeah, I'm feeling the energy on this one.
Yeah, definitely. We're going to talk about catastrophes. Isn't that a fun topic?
Get some coffee, folks.
Get some coffee. And we thank WSIE, Steve Jankowski, and Daryl for bringing us back one more time for episode number 6. Can you believe it? We got 6 almost in the can.
I'm shocked. They keep asking us to come back, so let's keep our fingers crossed.
Well, I guess just nobody to occupy this room during the time we do it, so might as well put it to good use, right?
I think it's the coffee.
It must be the coffee. And of course, thanks to the Chef Shop for the coffee. We have a great blend today. It's the Caramel Kiss, and I'll take any kind of kiss, John, caramel or otherwise.
I don't want your kiss.
Okay, all right.
But this is definitely your cup of coffee with the sweetness, the frou-frou.
It's a little flavored. I like flavored coffee. John knows that. So thanks to Scott and Nancy at the Chef Shop, located at 2320 Troy Road, Edwardsville, in the Schnucks Plaza next to Target. We'll be talking a little bit more about that coffee as we go forward. But in the meantime, there are basically 4 catastrophic perils that we are all faced on a day-to-day basis. Nobody likes to talk about these perils, and we're gonna pick one for today's discussion. But the perils are becoming sick or hurt, because if you're sick or you're hurt, not only do you have to deal with medical expenses and getting better and hopefully not having any permanent disabilities, but you're not earning income. If you're not earning income, then, of course, you can't put income away, as we talked about last week's session, into a 401k, HSA, IRA, 403b, whatever it happens to be. There's the risk of premature death. One thing for sure, there's death and there's taxes.
I'm not going to die. I'm living forever.
Well, let me know how that works for you, John. It's a good idea, but premature death is really a concern of dying before you're ready. And I guess some people do get ready earlier than others, but in the event of an unexpected death, there's a lack of fulfillment of a lot of goals, objectives, and plans for that individual, as well as the family. And we will be talking about that today. The other two perils are property damage and lawsuits. Of course, property damage, we buy home insurance, hoping never to have to use it. And lawsuits, we buy auto liability insurance, again, hoping never to
have to use it. We don't have any lawsuits in Madison County, do we?
We don't, I don't think. Yeah, right.
Sorry, was that out loud?
We'll pause for that one, but some of the common myths and misconceptions, one of the basic, there really are only 3 types of insurance as it's categorized. You have your basic term insurance. We're going to talk about that. You have individual term. You have sometimes term covering 2 individuals. You have group term. But as the name implies, you're buying the death benefit. You're buying the result of, if you die prematurely, what is going to be paid out and to whom it is going to be paid. You have your whole life or your cash value type of insurance, and those are further broken down into actual whole life, universal life, and variable life. You also have endowment life insurance. That's one you don't hear about too often, but it is a type of policy that's out there. So we're going to focus on the basics, and probably the first question I get asked as a financial advisor is, how much insurance do I need?
As much as you can get.
As much as you can afford, as much as you can get. And, of course, it is based on the fact that you can get insurance. So protecting your insurability is one of the things that we'll touch on today also.
I'm a good example of I wish I had bought insurance when I was younger. We never know what's going to happen, but in my situation, I got married later in life, and I didn't have insurance because I was single. There was no insurable interest, if you will. There was no one that needed to receive income if I died. However, I was a late bloomer in a lot of different ways, but I was a late bloomer and got juvenile diabetes or type 1 diabetes when I was 35. And then all of a sudden, after I got married and we started having children, I went to go and try and find some insurance. And being a type 1 diabetic, it became very expensive to get insurance, even just to get term policy. So it's always good to have a little bit of insurance in your back pocket, but you know, term insurance, or what we call pure insurance, that's, you know, there's an expression I like to use, buy term, invest the rest. And what you're doing with a life insurance policy that's a term policy is you're protecting your family. I don't know why we call it life insurance. It really should be death insurance. But you're protecting your family should you die. That way they can have as close to as possible the same standard of living as if you were working and providing the income. So that policy will kick in at your death, give them the income that they need so they can move on with their life and be able to live accordingly.
What do you think about insurance on a child, John?
Not a fan. You're protecting against the loss of income. Now, if you don't have the rainy day fund and it would become a financial challenge for a funeral expense. But in most cases, there are many ways to cover a funeral expense of a child. Again, now you're playing the emotional chords, like we talked about last time. Financial decisions based on emotion are not usually the good ones. They're not the best decisions made.
And I generally do agree with that. Emotional decisions are the ones that we often look back and regret having made on that basis. The one caveat that I will throw in there for child insurance, if the family does have a history of diabetes, heart disease, any types of medical issues, then I do often recommend that you take out insurance on a child, not so much as for the current death benefit, but for protection of future insurability. There is a rider that's commonly available on whole life, not so much term, but whole life, universal and variable, where you could take out, for an example, a $20,000 death benefit on a child, whether they're just born or up to 10, 12, 15 years old, doesn't matter, in the event something happens to them, which is unlikely, but that's not the purpose. The purpose is if you take out a $25,000 death benefit, then they would protect the ability to add additional coverage, oftentimes up to two times that amount, every 3 years from age 21 up through age 40. So you really have guaranteed their ability to buy insurance, even though they would be totally uninsurable. So if they went at age 24 or 5 and they had diabetes, they would be uninsurable. If they had a stroke or they had many other diseases, cancer, for example, they would be totally uninsurable. But if you did have the guarantee of future insurability on a policy, even if they had cancer as a youth, they would be guaranteed to add two times that face amount, usually seven times. So, you know, in that particular situation, you're looking at guarantee them several hundred thousand dollars of coverage that they would not be eligible to get otherwise.
That's a very good point.
And the cost is very nominal. I often see those insurability protection options at a couple of dollars a month. I mean, it's very cheap in protection for the future. So aside from that, how much insurance does someone need?
As much as they can get.
As much as they can get. Thank you, John. He's consistent, if nothing else.
Well, and this is where, you know, getting back to some previous episodes where we talked about having the plan. Once you have your retirement plan created and you're working with your advisor, it's very easy for them to say, okay, this is how much we need to have set aside in insurance for the next 15, 20, 25 years, whatever it may be, until you know, you reach your normal retirement age. So that's a pretty easy calculation to do. Then your advisor can take that number and say, whatever it may be, say it's $1 million that you need to have in insurance. And then, given your health history and so forth, be able to come back to you and say, okay, here's how much $1 million of term insurance to protect against a loss of income for your family you'll need to have, and here's how much it will cost. You know, they, if the advisor is worth their salt, they will have shopped it around and come back with a highly rated insurance company. As we talked about, that's important, and be able to give you a good quote to provide that protection. Something that I see a lot of families overlook is if the spouse is a stay-at-home, they need insurance too, even though it's not a essentially a loss of income as we traditionally view it. But if you have children, who's going to be at home while you're still working to take care of the children? And if you look at the rates for nannies and babysitters and so forth, it can become a sizable number, and you want to make sure that your spouse also has that protection.
Yeah, it really becomes a personal decision. You have to sit down, frankly, with your financial advisor and your spouse or significant other, whichever, and say, you play the what-if game. What if tomorrow I were hit by a car or suffered a massive heart attack and passed away? What has got to happen at that point? And in my particular case, when I was young, a couple of years ago, it was a situation where if something happened to me, there was retirement that would have to be subsidized and replaced.
A couple of years ago,
John. Shh.
Alzheimer's is kicking in already.
Well, you know how it works. But a couple of years ago, I would have needed replacement retirement income for my spouse and for our child. Would have wanted to have funded college. We talked about that on last week's show. That was an intention to have sufficient money to provide for my daughter to go to a four-year college. That was important to us. We would have had to have had money to either pay off the house or provide sufficient income to make the mortgage, tax, insurance payments for a period of years. We were fortunate that my wife stayed home to raise our daughter. She had not completed her degree until later, so it was important to have 3 or 4 years of income to allow her to go back, get her degree, and then be able to join the workforce at that point. So there was a pretty significant need for insurance early on. And as life continues, you know, our daughter, Christy, went through college, got her degree. She's self-sufficient, owns her own business today. My wife went back, got her degree. She's been working in the educational area for the last 10 or 12 years. We certainly have put money away for retirement. So the question becomes, in my case, what do I need insurance for?
As far as now?
As far as now.
Well, if you have a sufficient retirement plan and the debt is gone and the insurable interest really isn't there, that's the great thing about term. Whereas if you had, you know, when you were doing your planning and you selected a 20-year term, so that way by the time you're 65, the term insurance expires, you've done your savings, you have your retirement funded, and you no longer need insurance, and you may just need a little bit to cover a funeral expense, but knowing how you are, Larry, I'm pretty sure you've actually factored those costs into your plan as well.
I'm going to live forever, John.
You and me both.
Not going to be a problem. Well, there are a couple of other considerations. So, I have that discussion with my clients all the time. If you don't have a real need as far as income replacement, as far as providing retirement and other types of things, and why do you need insurance? And under today's tax laws, as we've discussed, you know, we can only talk about what we know today. The estate tax issue has bounced around Congress and the states for years. It's to the point now that you could protect up to $10 million of an estate. And I have to tell you, I'm not in that category yet. Maybe someday. And very few people are. So estate tax issues probably is not paramount for having life insurance last your entire lifetime. At one point it was, when the estate taxes were down under $1 million, there was many people, particularly farmers who own a lot of land, that fell into that category. They passed away, and all of a sudden their heirs, sons, daughters, spouse, whatever, you know, had a tax bill of $500,000 at the end of the year and couldn't pay it, ended up having to sell literally the farm to satisfy the tax man. So tax planning is important as far as estate issues and having permanent insurance. The other issue, and we see this more often than not, is a special needs type of situation. If you have a family which has a special needs child or children and are likely to survive the parents, then putting together a whole life type of, or universal or variable with some types of guarantees, insurance plan to be able to put enough money away to fund for that special needs individual for their expected life time. And again, that can only be done with permanent insurance. Term is, as the name implies, you buy it for a specific term. If you have a 10-year mortgage, you might have a 10-year term policy. If you anticipate 20 years or 25 years or 30 years to get the kids through school, you might have a 30-year term policy. The older you get, the shorter the time frame that you can get it. As a 55 or 60-year-old, you're not going to be eligible. They're not going to sell you a 20 or 30-year term policy. You might get a 10, you might get a 15. So it has to match the duration. The advantage is term is the least expensive type of insurance, although I will suggest that you take a hard look at the policy, because some of them do have convertibility options. Some of them are 10-year. If you have a 20-year policy, maybe the first 10, you can convert it to permanent insurance. Some of them you can convert up until the day that it expires. Some of them you can convert, you know, through age, your older ages. And why would you want to convert it, John?
I don't know.
That's why we're here.
Well, as you will, you know, this, I'm going to be playing devil's advocate again.
And he's good at it.
You know, as if we recall back to our show on annuities, I am not a fan of mixing investing with insurance. There's limited situations where they make sense. Larry brought out a good one on the insurance side, where if you have a special needs child, you need to have a special needs trust. That way your child can be taken care of after you are gone. And if you don't have permanent insurance inside of that trust, things can go wrong very quickly. So, you know, there are specific examples where it's prudent and it works and it should be structured that way. Typically, with insurance, I like to cover, as we talked about, the peril, the chance of loss, get that protected for the period of time that you need to have that protection and move on. Term insurance, as a cost per unit of insurance, is significantly less than your cash value or your whole life, universal life, variable life insurance policies. So, you know, kind of tongue-in-cheek, give Larry a hard time on the cash value insurance policies, as, you know, I'm not a particular fan of those.
Well, I'll give you one example, and I have had clients who had to exercise this, unfortunately. If someone has, let's say they have a 20-year term policy and they're concerned about funding for retirement and college, and somewhere during that term, they do have a convertibility option up to the last year, year 20, and they have a heart attack. Well, in most cases, when you have a severe heart attack or other issues, stroke related to that, you become uninsurable. So you have to take a look at that and say, all right, I have $1 million term policy, which is going to expire in 5 years. I just had a heart attack. I'm really concerned about my ability to continue my income at the level at which to which we've become accustomed. So now maybe I want to convert half of that. Maybe I want to convert $250,000 of that to permanent insurance, because that's the only way I can get insurance at this point in time. So convertibility and the ability to convert a term policy is important, because situations do change over time.
And what I have my term policy and I get those notices for the convertibility. And you'll easily see that the amount of insurance is reduced significantly to what you had originally purchased. And if the insurance, if you didn't die from the heart attack, this is me being devil's advocate and good at it. If you didn't die from the heart attack, your insurance is still there. the term insurance policy is still there until your retirement age and so forth. Just be careful when you get those convertibility notices, because you know, you want to read them and make sure that the change, what you're giving up for a permanent type of policy versus the term, may not provide the adequate protection if you have a heart attack tomorrow and die.
Yeah, that's true. Read the fine print. You always have to read the fine print. Can anyone insure anyone else, John?
Can anyone? Now we're going to get into what's called insurable interest.
he was pretty smart, I'd say.
The coffee has kicked in. No, the answer is no. There has to be an insurable interest, which means, you know, my wife, there's an insurable interest on me. Or if I die, there's a loss of income. My neighbor, no, there's no insurable interest there, so they would not be able to buy a policy on me.
That's exactly right. And insurable interest could be a spousal interest, could be a child or grandchild or parent special needs. There are a lot of different, but the insurance company is going to determine whether the insurable interest is accurate or not. Even a company can take out what's called a key life or key man insurance policy because they have an insurable interest in this person being able to perform their duties, and it would be a loss, a hardship to the company if they were not there to do that. So therefore, they have an insurable interest up to a limit. They can't take out $10 million of coverage for someone that can be replaced in a year or less. But they could probably take out $500,000 or so to be able to do a search, find someone who put into that place and minimize the hardship to the business. So
I could buy an insurance policy on you?
You could.
Hmm.
But as long as you make me a beneficiary. Let's see, that doesn't work. Anyway. So the ownership or insurable interest is a key. I am going to go ahead and touch on beneficiaries at this point because, again, it spans all types of insurance, whether it's term, whole life, universal, variable, or endowment. Make sure your beneficiaries are up to date.
That's a very good point. We see this a lot. I've actually had experience when I first got out of college and was working for a small boutique firm in Philadelphia. And this gentleman was incredibly wealthy, and we can't fill out the forms for you. They have to be done by you. And we kept warning him. He had gotten divorced and remarried, and he died. Who do you think got the money?
Uh-oh.
The lawyers.
The lawyers got the money.
But it's a legal binding document, and you want to make sure that, as Larry said, that they are current and up to date.
And I'll give you another specific example that happened a number of years ago in the qualified plan arena when someone has a policy within a retirement plan, then the retirement plan is the beneficiary of the policy, and it's not tax-free as other types of insurance outside of a qualified plan. In this case, the person didn't update their beneficiary. They got divorced. The money, of course, would go to their kids, but as a result of not having them as listed beneficiaries, they were unable to take advantage of some of the tax methods of paying out the distribution, and the kids ended up paying $20,000 or $30,000 in taxes that was totally avoidable by filling out one piece of paper had they done it appropriately.
For whatever reason, that one does get overlooked.
It does, and it's unfortunate, and we do our best to make sure that it doesn't get overlooked.
And so whenever you have that beneficiary form, you want to make sure you have a copy of it. If you're working for a company and it's tied to a 401k account, whoever's running or administering the plan for your company typically will keep those on record. If you're working with a financial advisor individually, you want to make sure that they have a copy of your beneficiary forms.
We're getting close on time, John, so we better move on. Time flies when you're having fun. Whole life. Basically, the way whole life is the insurance company is assuming the risk of you dying prematurely. And for that, you pay them X number of dollars. They invest that money. And the better companies pay out a dividend every year. The plan can accumulate cash value. And we talked about endowment policies earlier. You can have an endowment policy at age 65. You can have an endowment at 70, 75, 80, whenever it happens to be. Many policies don't endow until they reach their maturity, which used to be age 100. And now the mortality tables are going out actually to age 120. So I don't know that I'll get that far, but
we're living forever.
The endowment is actually when the policy's internal cash value that has accumulated with dividends that are left in the policy and is equal to the death benefit. So if I have a $50,000 whole life policy endowing at age 65, when I turn age 65, that policy has $50,000 of cash in it all of a sudden. It would pay out as a death benefit. I could take the cash value out at age 65 if it endows, but I would owe taxes on the growth that had happened inside the policy on the difference between the term cost of insurance and the whole life cost.
What do you think about whole life?
I think it has its place. If you have maxed out your 401k pre-tax, you've maxed out your other retirement savings plans, and you've taken care of first to protect your interest with term insurance, that whole life can be used as an accumulation vehicle. There are those who say that the internal rate of return on a whole life policy today is far above what the market is doing. It's certainly above what money markets and CDs are doing. But there are risks, again, because when you take the money out, it is taxable other than paid as a death benefit, which is tax-free. On a whole life policy, you can designate your beneficiaries. It can be put into what's called an ILIT or an irrevocable life insurance trust.
That's where I see this as being the perfect fit. You know, that trust that you have, irrevocable life insurance trust that you're talking about and so forth, because that needs the permanent feature to keep the trust intact, if you will.
And you get into advanced estate planning where you're using, potentially even using annuities to pay for the premium due on a whole life policy within an irrevocable life insurance trust. So there are some complex methods of planning that we get into. So whole life has its purpose. You understand, need to understand how it works, pros and cons. It is the most, in many cases, the most expensive form of providing a death benefit in the event of a premature death. You do have universal and variable. In the scheme of things, term and whole life were really the first insurances that were available. And it was back, I want to say, in the 70s and 80s when universal insurance came out. The insurance companies thought, well, if you pay us a little more money than the term cost, we'll invest it for you because we can do a better job investing it, and we'll give you some of the earnings off of the investment. And, John, that worked great until the mid-80s, and a lot of those universal life policies, we use a very specific scientific term. It's called blew up, where the policies could no longer support themselves, the earnings were insufficient to offset the cost of insurance, and the insured got a letter from the insurance carrier saying, oh, by the way, you know that policy you were paying $100 a month on? Well, we can't do that anymore. Now it's $200. And those policies didn't work out for a lot of people. There were a lot of lawsuits in that period of time, and it didn't go well. So
imagine that.
What the insurance companies do in the late 80s and 90s, they went to variable life. So now, not only are they going to invest your money, they're going to give you mutual fund-like separate accounts to select from to grow your money. And guess what happened to those?
They blew up.
Pow. So down the road, the variable life earnings was insufficient to offset the term cost of insurance. And all of a sudden you got a letter saying, oh, by the way, we're doubling your premium because we have to.
I don't know why I'm so skeptical of blending investments with insurance. I'm not sure.
There's a few examples you might want to refer to. So your most basic parts of insurance types, the whole life, the term, you know what you're paying for, you know the term you're paying it for, and you know what's going to happen if you die. When you get into universal and variable, sure, they have guaranteed death benefits on some of them. If you pay a minimum of X number of dollars for your lifetime and you pay it regularly, then we will guarantee the death benefit even if the costs internally in the policy go up. But now you're playing a game with the insurance company, who's going to win? What's the value going to be? Are they going to be able to survive? Because there have been insurance carriers who didn't have good A ratings and better, who did not survive to pay those benefits. So you have to have a well-rated insurance carrier. Term is probably the first place to look, especially when you're starting out. Low cost, it suits the benefit. You decide how much you need. And going down a road, convertibility can be an option, particularly if you suffer a catastrophic illness of some type, become uninsurable. Whole life gives you the cash value. It's locked in. You know what it is. Some people used to say it's forced savings. Well, it is to a certain extent because there is going to be cash there and you have a rough idea of what it's going to be as guaranteed by the policy, although it may be greater if their earnings are better than that. Universal and variable have their place, but they're a little more risky. They're used, again, in some advanced planning types of situations. So you buy life insurance for the death benefit. That's my opinion. Bottom line, everything else is kind of the fluff around it. Make sure that you understand it. Make sure your beneficiaries are up to date. Keep your copy of your contract so you know what it is and how it works. And we're coming to the end of the show here, John. That was an interesting topic.
I'm so excited that we got done talking about death.
Yeah, well, let's talk about something a little more fun than that. How about the Caramel Kiss? That's the coffee today from the Chef Shop.
This is a very good coffee. I know you will enjoy it because of the frou-frou, the sweetness factor of it. Good afternoon coffee. It's definitely not the wake up like the Colombian was last week, but
it'd be good with a little dessert.
A little
Caramel Kiss coffee, a little dessert, be nice. It's a Coffee Master's finest Arabica coffee. It's flavored with creamy, toasty, buttery, rich flavor of caramel to create a taste sensation in a cup.
And you can taste the caramel. It's not one of those caramel coffees that you can't taste it. You can taste the caramel.
So it's kind of like dessert in a cup.
Absolutely.
Chef Shop. Here in Edwardsville, they're 2320 Troy Road, Edwardsville, Illinois, 62025, in the Schnucks Plaza next to Target. Phone number 618-659-9840. Chef's Shop at prodigy.net, chefs.shop, shoppe at prodigy.net. Thanks to both Scott and Nancy for helping us out. And I wonder what coffees we'll have on the next show, John.
I don't know. There's plenty to choose from there.
They've got 18 of them. We're not even halfway through yet, so we'll look forward to being able to talk about some of the others. If you have questions, please send them to jgraney@nickelfinancial.com or llexo@nickelfinancial.com. We'd love to answer your questions. We hope the information on life insurance has been helpful and not just totally confusing you. But again, if you have specifics, email us. We'd be happy to get you answers for that. We do thank WSIE for having us back and hope to continue with the Financial Cafe every Saturday morning. John, is that a wrap?
That is a wrap.
You've been listening to The Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop in Edwardsville, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. Listeners are invited to send your questions regarding retirement, investments, or any other financial topic that may pique your interest. Send the questions to john@jgraney@nickelfinancial.com or to larry@llexo@nickelfinancial.com. John and Larry will discuss those questions each week during their Q&A session. If you prefer, they will respond to you in private. Thanks for listening to the Financial Cafe on 88.7 WSIE The Sound.